Heck on wheels, proclaims a recent newspaper headline for a roller derby. Heck? I mean, what's next? Hex angels? War is heck? Heck hath no fury? One wonders how modern society, with its bandying about of the F-word and its graphic depiction of sex in theatre and film, could be so squeamish about language. By definition, euphemism means substituting a favourable expression for a more accurate or possibly offensive one. Literally, it means fair of speech. Thus, there are no longer any old people, only senior citizens. The poor have become the underprivileged, drug addicts are the chemically dependent, and people do not die, they pass away or go to their reward. And nobody's fired. They're downsized or let go. The saga of the two criminals who cleverly escaped from a maximum security prison in upstate New York last summer also turned out to be an escape from simple, straightforward English. Thus, they or anyone associated with the chase for the fugitives were described not as criminals or even as people, but as individuals. Some of the chasing was being done not by dogs, but by canines, a far more impressive animal. How happy Thomas Bowdler would have been with all of this. After years spent in medicine, travel, and philanthropy, and some study of the education of children, Bowdler set out in 1818 to purify the works of Shakespeare, striking from them those words and expressions that cannot with propriety be read aloud in the family. The word Bowdlerize was first used in print in 1836 and became a term of abuse. The Victorian age in which he lived was the heyday of euphemism, a time when pregnant women were described as being in an interesting condition. Trousers were referred to as nether garments, and it was even suggested, perhaps jocularly, that piano legs be covered up lest viewing them might give rise to lascivious thoughts. Today, according to that arbiter of language, Fowler's Modern English Usage, euphemism is used less in finding discrete terms for what is indelicate than as a protective device for governments and as a token of a new approach to psychological and sociological problems. Fowler says it is notorious in totalitarian countries where assassination and aggression can be made to look respectable by calling them liquidation and liberation. George Orwell, whose writing was clear and spare, had no time for euphemism. He suggested that political language consists largely of question-begging and cloudiness. For example, defenseless villages are bombarded from the air, the inhabitants driven out into the countryside, the cattle machine-gunned, the huts set on fire with incendiary bullets. This is called pacification. Theodore Bernstein, in his book The Careful Writer, notes that if a writer needs further guidance about the use of euphemisms, let it be noted that it tends to be the less educated who are most addicted to these linguistic evasions. These are the people who refer to every man as a gentleman, as did the reporter who referred to the Norwegian gentleman who killed 77 people. Optimistically, however, Bernstein believes that such genteelisms are passing, but not quite yet. We might still be exhorted not to let our dogs go to the bathroom in the street, but human ablutions are also euphemized, as in making a pit stop and answering the call of nature. And euphemism still infests the fields of real estate and sports. For example, a house described as a compact bijou residence in an up-and-coming area might very well be a matchbox-sized dwelling, too small to accommodate your flat-screen TV, and located in an insalubrious area, possibly even a slum. And in sports, a player described as having some off-field issues in the past but is now showing some maturity might well mean that he was habitually drunk and or drug addicted, arrested, and close to being dropped from the team or fired or let go. Even so, the process of expurgation and euphemism flourishes in ever more creative ways. For example, au naturel is a phrase that covers up nudity, so to speak. Prisons are now known as corrective facilities, and politicians, denied the right to call their fellows liars, may say only that they are guilty of being economical with the truth. Similarly, British newspapers are not allowed to describe a politician in that country as drunk, but only as appearing tired and emotional. Thus, the former British Foreign Secretary George Brown, who was a perpetual drunk and would be regularly falling out of taxis and going splosh into the sidewalk, was described as being tired and emotional. Oh well, euphemism has clearly not passed away, but what the heck?